Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello, this is If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and today I'm interviewing Ellen Augustine, who is going to talk about something very close and dear to everyone's hearts in America, and that is how their tax dollars are being spent and have been spent for many years. Ellen's passion is creating a just, peaceful, and sustainable world, isn't it, for all of us? She ran for US Congress as Ellen Schwartz and co-founded and founded four nonprofits. She's a contributing author to A Game as Old as Empire, The Secret World of Economic Hitmen, and The Web of Global Corruption. She is co-author of Taking Back Our Lives in the Age of Corporate Dominance. She wrote as Ellen Schwartz. Ellen has been featured in Utney Reader and Hope magazine. She's received the Woman of Achievement and Thread of Hope Awards and was named one of the 21 visionaries for the 21st century. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Okay, let's just backtrack a little. How did you get involved in studying the military budget and what is actually going on in the United States in terms of money?
Well, this is something that I've actually been interested in since the early 1980s when I first heard you, Helen. You were talking about the nuclear danger, and I started exploring it. And I became a speaker for the Nuclear Freeze campaign.
Yep.
And then in the mid-1990s, I ran for U.S. Congress, and that was a very strong platform of mine that we could have the money for what we wanted if we only just decreased our military spending. And then maybe about a year or so ago, I ran into an old friend of mine, and I said, "What's up?" And Barry Hermanson said that he had developed a card which clearly showed the U.S. discretionary spending, and this shocking little image showed that more than 60% of discretionary funds went toward the military. So Barry had printed this card out and pre-addressed it to the president, and they were flying off the shelves with people being able to, you know, being shocked by it and then being really thrilled at being able to write their three alternative priorities on the back.
Well, we'll be interviewing Barry after we've interviewed you. So the interview is split into two, with Ellen first and Barry second. So let's get stuck into what the main discussion is. The argument for military spending is always that it creates jobs, jobs, jobs. And I know that, you know, for instance, the B-2, I think, was made parts of it in every single congressional district, the ejection seat in one, the landing tires in another, you know, the windscreen in another, just to keep all of Congress on track. Per dollar spent, how many jobs are created in the military versus how many jobs could be created with the same sort of money in healthcare, which is just number one priority now, education, renewable alternative energy, urban revitalization, and the environment per se? Ellen.
Well, it's really astounding. For each $1 billion that you take, if you give that to the military, you get 8,500 jobs. If you give that for people to do home weatherization, you get 12,800 jobs. In healthcare, 12,900. Education, 17,700. And mass transit, 19,800. So the thing to remember is that twice as many jobs are created by equivalent spending on education and mass transit as on the military.
Okay, so let's discuss the current military budget that's just been passed, I think, by the Congress. How much is it for? And I'm including, we want to know the black parts, like the National Security Agency and the spy agencies and the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan. In toto, Ellen, how much is now being allocated to the military, to virtually to killing?
Well, I'm going to let Barry go over that in detail, but I'm just going to give a ballpark figure. Mm-hmm. The Department of Defense asked for $518 billion, and that's what the all the press covers. However, there is so much more, like you said, the black part of it that's outside of view. And when you add up these other figures, these are things like the Department of Energy funding for nuclear weapons, research, storage, and related activities, Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, taking care of our guys and women, military retirement, the national debt, the portion that really is because of wars. When you add all that in, you add in another $275 billion per year. So the money that the military gets is not just $518 billion, it's $863 billion. This is outrageous.
Well, does that include the present wars that are going on now?
Only $70 billion. So it doesn't include the total funds for Iraq.
Well, what are the total funds going on out now to those wars? Of course, wars are great because when a truck is damaged or destroyed, you have to build another one. When you use the missiles and whatever, you know, you have to build more. So it's a great way to keep the military-industrial complex going. But if you include those wars, my understanding, Ellen, is that the budget comes out to about $1 trillion a year.
Yes, I agree with you. What I was talking about was only just a yearly portion. So the $70 billion would be for this year for Iraq and Afghanistan. So when you talk about the full expenditures, it's much more than that.
No, I'm talking about per year, though, the military budget per year. Look, it's around $1 trillion.
Which is real money.
Well, I someone gave me an analogy. If you'd spend $1 million a minute since Jesus was born, you would just about be getting to $1 trillion. I mean, it's like thinking about infinity and space going on forever. It's almost incomprehensible. Yet here is a country that the only one really in the Western world that has no form of nationalized free medical care. And I know that Americans have been told, oh, that's socialism, oh. But in fact, in Australia, we have totally free medical care. My friend broke her knee recently. She went to hospital for, I think, 10 days. She had the best orthopedic surgeon in Sydney, x-rays, you name it, theatre, and the bill came to $700. That's all. So that's what you all deserve. And I often feel when I talk to an American audience that there's no indignation. They sort of sit there as if paralyzed when I tell them that this is their due and their right for free medical care, let alone education for the children. So what would you like to comment on what I just said, Ellen?
It is very astounding, but it's because Americans have been so brainwashed that we have got to have our principal budget go to security, and security only being defined in military terms.
Yeah, but security isn't killing other people in other lands.
Exactly.
And it's a euphemism. It's like we had to destroy the village to save it. So choose another word for that, Ellen.
Well, let's see, military budget rather than security. Military budget is much better, but when
it used to be called the Department of War.
Right. Yes, it used to be.
Why don't we call it that again?
Well, because right now there's not very much appetite in the government to have things be called as they really are.
That can be changed by everyone deciding that, you know, let's call a, you know, well, we've got an expression in Australia that doesn't fit with you people, but let's be frank and use the correct English for what we're actually doing. And by disguising these things in euphemistic language, then people don't quite get it, you know? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's why the Not My Priorities campaign is so powerful. Because when you have an image on a postcard that's in color that shows that 60% of discretionary taxpayer dollars are going to the military, people go, oh, my God, that's outrageous. And then, but because people have been brainwashed to think this is important and they have not been given any other information, they don't know how to question it. For example, they don't know that our military budget is equivalent to almost all the rest of the countries of the world combined, friend and foe. that our military budget, if you look at the budgets of the so-called threat nations and China and Russia.
Who calls them threat nations?
Well, threat nations as defined by our government.
Do they actually call them threat nations, Russia and China?
Yeah. Even if you include Russia and China, which we have great trade relations with now, among other kinds of exchanges, all of the budgets of those countries combined are less than one-third of our baseline military budget of $518 billion. So it's completely out of proportion. Mm. And then when you start to say to people, well, let's look at the root causes of things. Why is there so much violence and terrorism? When people instead are given the chance to think about, if we spent a part of the money that we now put into the military and put that into giving people clean water in their villages, health care, basic education, basic agricultural implements, there would be no terrorism in the world. Terrorists would have no audience when they began to speak. Mm. So people get this on a basic level. And what they need to do, everybody is so busy these days, Helen. You know, they're upset by it, but they think, what can I do? I'm just one
person. Well, I know that, yeah.
So when Barry came up with this postcard that shows the image on one side and you flip the page, you flip it to the back, and people get a chance to write their three alternative priorities. They take less than 1 minute to write what is important to them, pop a stamp on, and get it out to the president. This is something that is powerful. We already have more than 30,000 of these cards out to the White House from across the nation, and every day people are asking for more cards. When we have millions of these, not only to the president, which this first version is mailed to, but then to representatives and senators, because they hold the power of the purse. When we have millions of these out, then the will of the people will not be able to be ignored.
Now, you talked about discretionary budget, Ellen, and I'm one who's often confused. What is a discretionary budget compared to other budgets in the U.S. Government? What does it mean?
Okay, there are things where the money comes in for one purpose, for example, Social Security, and it's got to go out for that same purpose. Congress can't play with that money in any way. There are things like the national debt that we have to pay. Mm-hmm. So that's not something also that Congress has any say over. After things like that that need to be paid are paid, then what you have left is what Congress can allocate. And in the budget year, the military appropriations comes up first, and there's very little debate about it. Two-thirds of our budget, there is very little debate. But the rest of the one-third that has expenditures for everything that we care about, for what makes our life worth living, things like health care, environment, education, affordable housing, transportation, all these things, there are huge battles over the crumbs that are left after the military has gotten the lion's share.
Yeah, it's really quite wicked. I'm interviewing Ellen Augustine, whose passion is creating a just, peaceful, and sustainable world, and she ran for Congress as Ellen Schwartz, and I hope she runs for Congress again. Now, Ellen, let's get into the nuclear situation with the Pentagon. The U.S. currently maintains somewhat over 10,000 nuclear bombs, and most of them are hydrogen bombs, which are massively huge compared to, say, the Hiroshima bomb, which was a little firecracker. You say 1,600 of these hydrogen bombs are on hair trigger alert, but I think actually when I've been looking at it, it's more like 2,500. But anyway, what is hair trigger alert, and what is the peril to people and the planet by having these weapons on hair trigger alert, and what are they targeted at, these American weapons, Ellen Augustine?
Well, hair trigger alert means that should our armed forces mistakenly take a military, just a regular military exercise or a flight of birds as an incoming nuclear attack, that we would have all these hundreds of weapons that could be launched within minutes. This is an enormous peril. And the fact that we don't have, it's not a situation like it used to be in the Cold War. This is absolutely something that does not need to be in this day and age. The peril of this is enormous. Most people, when they think of nuclear weapons, well, there's been a phrase called, like with nuclear energy, oh, nuclear energy is too clean and cheap to meter. And there's like been a carryover. They try to make people think like nuclear weapons are also these things that are very powerful but safe. It is so not the case. Plutonium, which hundreds of pounds of plutonium have been created for use in these bombs, 1/1,000,000th of a gram of plutonium can cause a lung cancer. We are talking about the end of life on Earth for human beings should there be a nuclear disaster. And you know, this is not something that's out of the range of happening. In the past 2 decades, there have been more than 25 incidents where nuclear materials have been lost or stolen. This is a hugely dangerous situation.
And though these hydrogen bombs are in their missile silos, there are I think three hydrogen bombs on each missile, Minutemen, three missiles. But who are they targeted on, Ellen? Where are the targets?
There are many targeted in Russia. I wish I had the stats otherwise, but I'm sorry, I'm not up on that.
I can fill you in. Because I wrote about this in my book, The New Nuclear Danger. Since the Cold War ended, America has had the audacity to target most cities in China, even though, you know, most of the things you buy in America now actually are made in China. So the thing is totally out of control. And actually, Russia targets Europe, England, Australia, I don't think New Zealand, Canada, and the US. So if all these weapons go off and Russia's got about the same number of hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert, and the whole thing would take about an hour to complete, because once one side presses the button, their weapons go into space and they take half an hour to land on the targets, and the other side's satellite has picked up the attack and they launch because your weapons are targeted on Russian missile silos, not on people. So if you knock out all their missiles first, you win the nuclear war. And because they don't want you to win the nuclear war, they, in that half an hour period, launch their weapons too. So it's all over in about an hour. And would you like to comment about President Obama and Medvedev and their meeting that has recently been held in Moscow, Ellen?
Well, things are shifting really quickly. Last year, former Cold War warriors Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State George Shultz, and former Secretary of Defense William Perry all came out and said they want to eliminate nuclear weapons. President Obama said the same thing in February this year. And then just in the last couple days, President Obama has been meeting with the Russian President Medvedev, and they have agreed that the currently under the START Treaty, they are allowed 2,200 nuclear warheads and 1,600 ballistic missile carriers. But under the new treaty that they are proposing that hopefully they will negotiate out, they want to have reduced the 2,200 nuclear warheads, which are on alert, strategic nuclear warheads, down to 1,500 to 1,675. And they want to decrease the amount of missile carriers from 1,600 to 500 or 1,000. So this is not a huge decrease, but it's a good step in the right direction.
So you're feeling good about that?
I'm feeling good about that. We need, you know, when President Obama was elected, and the night that he gave his acceptance speech, he said to people, I need for you to keep pushing me.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what we have to do.
Yeah.
And this is why the Not My Priorities campaign is so good, because it's a way to keep pushing President Obama, an easy way that doesn't take much time for people who are so busy with their own lives.
Yes, that's a good point. Now, what percentage of the military budget, which we'll say is a ballpark like $1 trillion a year, is consumed by nuclear weapons design, production, delivery systems, readiness, and the whole thing?
Well, the estimates range between $40 billion and $98 billion, but probably
what percentage is that? Yeah.
The National Resources Defense Council conservatively estimated that $40 billion, or a little less than 10% of the annual U.S. military budget of the base figure, is for nuclear weapons design, procurement, delivery vehicles, etc. Now, when you think about this, $40 billion is a huge figure. And if instead of putting this toward nuclear weapons that are so dangerous, if we instead use the money for what the UN Development Program report called for, $40 billion could cover the additional cost of achieving and maintaining universal access for basic education for everyone in the world, basic health care for everyone in the world, reproductive health care for women everywhere in the world, adequate food for all, and clean water and sewers for all. It is so clear what we could do instead of putting $40 billion into just nuclear weapons and launch vehicles.
Oh, God. So that could fix most of the problems in the world. Then you could come back to the United States. How much are they estimating, and I know there have been estimates, of how much a nationalized healthcare system would cost for America?
I'm not sure about that. Barry also works on that issue, so he may be able to answer that.
I'll ask him that. But also, America per capita spends more on healthcare than any other country in the world, so actually you wouldn't need to use that $40 billion that you would save by stopping all work on nuclear weapons, because the money's already there and being spent, far too much actually, on healthcare. So you could use it to help most of the people in the world, which is absolutely imperative. Now, where else, Ellen Augustin, could the military budget be cut? And would you like to talk about that?
Sure. In this country, there's about 6,000 bases right on the U.S. soil. But more expensive bases are around the world.
How many of them are there around the world?
Very few people know, but the United States has between 700 and 1,000 military bases in over 100 countries around the world, many of which do not want us there anymore. And people think, oh, well, a base, you know, some troops and a little bit of equipment. It's not the case. On these military bases, they're like little Americas. They have everything on there, so they're very expensive to maintain. Also, something that's of great concern is many nuclear weapons are based on foreign bases. This is horribly dangerous.
Which bases are then in which countries are American nuclear weapons continuing to be deployed, based? I know Germany's one.
Oh, yes, Germany.
I think, Britain. I think the Netherlands. You can actually find that out by Googling it. And the point you made about military bases in over 100 countries is terribly pertinent. I mean, I think we all should become well educated about that too. I do have the exact numbers actually at home on my computer. But I think people must become aware that America is not too popular by putting these bases complete with McDonald's, bowling alleys, you name it, in foreign countries in many places around the world. And that it would be a good thing if, with a little humility, the United States decided to bring all those bases home and think differently about what security means. I always used to say that America has friendly countries to the north and south, Canada and Mexico, and that you could be protected by the Coast Guard, actually, on the east and west coasts, providing that all nuclear weapons in the world on their missiles were eradicated. And then that brings me back to what President Obama's doing now, which is to move towards, I hope, and he's talked about it, bilateral nuclear disarmament with Russia because of the, 27,000 nuclear weapons in the world. Russia and America own 97%.
Yes.
So, Ellen, would you like to comment about what that trajectory and momentum could mean to the world?
Well, it's very interesting. There's just been a report that was put out in April of this year from a group called the Nuclear Weapons Complex Consolidation Policy Network. And they prepared a very detailed report which brought us down between now and 2025 to 500 strategic nuclear warheads. Now, other countries, for example.
What, you mean in the United States?
Mm-hmm, right.
500 strategic from like 2,000, 2,500.
Exactly. Yeah. And they, because right now Britain, Russia, China, Britain and China have about 300 weapons. Of course, Russia is our counterpart in having several thousand. But if we went down through to 500 weapons by 2025, we would still have the greatest nuclear power in the world. But from that point, it would be a moral declaration, agreeing with what the rest of the world wants. In the rest of the world, typically 60 to 80% of people want us to have a world without nuclear weapons. So
yep.
If we came down to 500 weapons, that would be a place then where we could start to talk to the other lesser nuclear mm-hmm. nations and really start to take nuclear weapons off the planet.
Yeah.
And what this group suggests is that right now we have, this is another area of considerable savings. Right now we have a weapons complex where in 8 sites, various parts of the production and testing is done in the United States. So this group is saying that we could consolidate down to 3 sites, namely the 2 in New Mexico, Los Alamos Lab and Sandia Laboratories, and then also the Pantex plant in Texas, that we could save money by consolidating. We would have tighter security, and we would be well on the path to working with the rest of the world to really eliminate nuclear weapons altogether.
Yes, and I think we need to stress too, Ellen Augustin, that all of us live on hair trigger alert, even in Australia, and 300, 500 hydrogen bombs, and I guess the Russians would maintain their 500 as well, are easily enough to cause nuclear winter, actually, and not the full-blown one, but nuclear autumn, so that billions of people would starve as their crops failed across the world. And it's important, concerned as we are about global warming, which is really pressing us now, there's an alternative climate scenario, and that is if tonight the button was pressed by accident in Russia or in America, which is totally on the cards because human beings are fallible and computer systems are fallible, that we would have the reverse of global warming, which is nuclear winter. And I think people need to look at that too and decide whether or not they really love their children and their grandchildren and they want those children to have a future and get their priorities straight in the way that you and Barry are advocating. So I think we'll move on to Barry Hermanson now, but I thank you very much, Ellen Augustin.
Say one more thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times people get very discouraged, but over the ages, when the public have become focused on a new vision, whether it was ending slavery, establishing basic labor rights, when they have focused on a new vision, the power of the people has prevailed. So this is something that is very doable. And the time is now when everybody is laser focused on where all of our money is going because of the economic meltdown. People are ready to do this, and it takes very little time. And with that, I shall turn you over to Barry.
That's a very, very good point, Ellen Augustin. Now I would like to introduce Ellen's working partner, Barry Hermanson. Barry Hermanson is an advocate for working people. In 2003, he co-authored San Francisco's minimum wage ordinance, improving wages for 54,000 people. With the passage of this bill, it is estimated that more than $100 million per year is being transferred into the pockets of low-wage workers. In 1999 and 2000, Barry co-chaired San Francisco Living Wage Coalition, which passed legislation increasing wages and providing health care for 20,000 workers. Barry has been a candidate for US Congress and the California State Assembly. He's past president of one of the largest neighborhood merchant associations in San Francisco. So welcome to the program, Barry Hermanson.
Thank you very much.
Look, you've done some fabulous work in your state and your community, helping people on the lower end of the wage spectrum. How did you get into looking and developing this Not My Priorities campaign, looking at military spending, Barry?
Well, I reside in the 12th Congressional District here in California, and the representative at the time, unfortunately he has since passed away, but Tom Lantos was really known as a hawk, very supportive of military spending. And, you know, he was very good on a lot of other issues. And so in the San Francisco Bay Area, he'd be good on environment. He would be excellent on human rights. And you know, so people really liked him. And I think that they gave him a pass, largely, on his voting record for military spending.
Mm-hmm.
Always get elected, reelected every year by large margins. And it was very difficult for anyone to challenge him. Well, I decided that I would challenge him anyway. And I began to develop, I had seen this pie chart, actually got printed in the paper, and it was just stunning to see it, and decided that I would like to take this and show this image to people out in the community. And overall, the response was just stunning. There is not enough time for me to be able to tell you all of just the wonderful feedback that I get on it.
Describe some of it, and first of all, describe the pie chart in detail, and then describe, you know, some of the reactions that people have.
Well, first of all, if individuals actually want to see a version of it, they can go to the website, notmypriorities.org, and there's an older version of it on there. But it's a pie chart.
Yeah.
And so on the postcard itself, there's text across the front that says U.S. budget priorities. And then directly underneath that is the pie chart, which is dominated in red by 60%, actually, of the pie chart is in red. And there's words Pentagon and Iraq with amounts that we're spending this year.
Mm.
And then all on the bottom side are very little slices for all, and that's all in green. So I have red for all the military stuff and green for all of the things that actually serve our communities, like education, health, environment, housing, et cetera, transportation. And so people can see, and this is our discretionary budget.
Yes, we've had that explained.
That's the amount that Congress and the president create and vote on every year.
Okay, so tell us the reactions, Barry, of the people who look at this pie chart.
Well, I have to tell you, last year I was out at Burning Man. I've started to go most years now.
You were out at where were you? You were out
at Burning Man.
What's Burning Man?
Well, as many of your listeners may know of it, it's a huge gathering. In the week before Labor Day here in America, and actually people come from around the world to this. It's a huge gathering of folks. There's a lot of wonderful art. It's a celebration, and it's out in the Nevada desert.
Right.
And it's any of your listeners, they can type in Burning Man, and they'll get more than they want to hear. But at any rate, I wore this thing around, and there are 40 to 50,000 people that are camped out on a dry lake desert bed and attending a festival for a whole week. And I'm wearing this painting around that says U.S. budget priorities and has this pie chart on it. People, and I was virtually the only guy doing politics out there, and people were coming up and hugging me.
Really?
Saying, thank you for being here. Folks wanted to get in a picture with me. They wanted to take pictures of me. And I had a bunch of cards, and the cards were, people take them. Virtually no one walks away and says, I disagree with you, which to me is stunning. Because if you look at how our politicians vote for and what their priorities are, the postcard is very clear. It says U.S. budget priorities, which is 60% military. And on the bottom of the postcard, it says, not my priorities.
Yeah.
And I find, as a candidate for office, and really working it over the last couple of years, and after the end of my candidacy, I'm continuing on. You know, I should say I'm a Green, and so that in California, Greens have no chance of getting elected. That's why that's why I'm not in office in Congress today. But I found that in the off in the general public, virtually unanimous that people agree. Not my priorities to spend so much money on military.
Well, I mean, they might take one of your postcards and send it off to the president, but that's not enough, is it, Barry?
You know, it is. It's very powerful. When I started, as I said, Mr. Lantos died, and so there was a special election for that office, and a very popular individual who had held many different public offices, was extremely well known. She was the one that won the special election. Well, I was a candidate against her. Now, last year, when the Defense Appropriations Bill came forward, it was a very significant increase over the prior year. And this new congressperson,
who is it?
She voted for it. She voted for it.
What is
her
name, Barry?
There were only 23 members in the entire U.S. House of Representatives out of 435 that voted no on giving the Pentagon a huge increase. It's virtually a unanimous vote. So that summer, I put that on the back of my literature, and I am out in the community saying, Jackie Speier voted for this thing. Is that your priority? By midsummer, her staff was calling up saying, well, wait a minute, this is a mistake. We didn't mean to vote for this. I think that we had an impact.
Because
the people in the community were telling her, wait a minute, that's not our priority. And today, Jackie Speier is a strong anti-war advocate.
Goodness.
She's been quoted in the paper that she will not vote for war funding because she's heard the message from her constituents.
Okay, so the next obvious question is, she's in a particular congressional district, the 12th.
That's right.
Okay,
and that's where we need to change the vote.
Yeah, but Barry Hermanson, how many military corporations work in the 12th district, and how many people are employed?
Probably not a lot.
Not a lot?
We have Silicon Valley here, so there's some research and development. There's some software. There's some.
Well, according to my research over the years, California is the state that is responsible for the largest amount of military corporations working within it and the greatest number of jobs working on the military.
That's right.
That's still so. Well, maybe this is just a thought, but here you are in California. It's the largest state in the nation. People are fairly well advanced in their thinking, I think, in most places in California. California is in a dreadful economic mess and going broke.
Horrible.
What, you know, if you could just get the whole of California, how many people live in California?
Ooh, it's 35 million people.
Yeah, if somehow you could sort of get people to volunteer and door knock every single house in California, and I mean that, with your postcards... And you could get California as a prototype to rise up to say, hey, wait a minute, look, we're not going to spend our money anymore or jobs
or whatever,
making things to kill people. We are going to have a free healthcare system. We're going to change the state of California. We're going to lead the nation in renewable energy production. We're going to have free education right through college. And that money is going to provide huge numbers of jobs and income for California.
Absolutely.
Then you could show, and especially as you're drenched in sun, so you're perfect for, I mean, every house should have a solar panel on it. And you could fill all your parking lots up with solar panels on top and have electric cars plugged in. I mean, the possibilities are endless. So with your quite simple but pungent message and campaign, if you enlarge that and really, you know, I wouldn't mind sometimes coming and door knocking for you. in various neighborhoods. You'd provide tremendous interest, tremendous media attention.
That's right.
And, you know, I think you're perfectly placed to do that, don't you?
You know, and I think that, you know, one of the keys to the campaign is that it is simple. I know that if I get in a room with, you know, 25 different people, that their funding priorities are probably different than what mine are.
Mm-hmm.
We may share quite a few, but one of the stunning things is that people that disagree with me on most political issues, many, many agree with me on this.
Mm.
And so, you know, your listeners may not, you know, I'm a Green. Ellen ran as a Democrat. The Democrats and Republicans are the two major parties in the United States. Republicans are off to the right politically. And Republicans agree with me, this is not my priority. That to me is stunning, to say that the populace is so, at least here in the Bay Area, and we're starting to take this outside the Bay Area, so hopefully we can actually get it into some more conservative areas. I really want to hear, you know, when we're surrounded by more conservative folks, whether I still get that reaction.
Yeah.
I believe I will. And it's with so much of the people behind this is not my priority, but yet our legislators are so overwhelmingly in favor of it. I believe that our legislators, if we're able to get a couple thousand delivered to an individual member of Congress, I think it's possible to change their vote.
Out of their district.
And delivering a postcard is very valuable. Sending an email, that's worth something. But you know what?
No,
it's actually the
much.
Most powerful thing for any legislator is to write them a letter.
Mm. Well,
and
I know
love that, you know, if your listeners, anybody that's in the U.S., actually, if you live, I don't care, anywhere, we'll mail you a postcard so you can look at it. We'll send you a couple. Please just contact us. The contact info is on the website, notmypriorities.org. It's a funky website, but you can get through to me. And we'll send you a couple of, I'll send you a postcard you can put on your refrigerator. I'll send you one that you can mail to President Obama. And then I'll send you a third one that you can give to your neighbor or your friend.
No, they need more than that. They need two more, Barry. One for their, two for their state senators and one for their congressional representative.
That's right. That's right. So they need five cards.
Yeah, they do. They need five cards.
Thank you.
It's interesting.
I know because I've been doing politics now for a while.
Yeah.
When they get mail, they pay attention to it.
I know. Well, during the Freeze campaign in the 80s and the abolition movement during the 80s, congressional representatives were getting huge amounts of mail on nuclear weapons, and they used to weigh them. Pro and con, for and against. So I used to say to people, well, just slip a lead sinker in the envelope of your letter and that'll influence the vote.
That's so good.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you need to be, or we need to be very creative. I always like to talk about Gandhi too, who went back to India, not in a uniform with a gun to take on the British Raj, but almost stark naked.
Mm-hmm.
And he led a salt march. So that's a kind of asymmetrical reaction which can grab the imagination of the people, fire them up. And I think you've got also an asymmetrical approach with this very simplistic and simple message that grabs people as soon as they see it.
It does. And you know what? We won't have to resort to asking anybody to put a piece of lead to weigh down the letter, because you know what? There'll be virtually nobody. I'd say nobody. It's the only people that are lobbying our members of Congress are the folks that are the very few companies that are actually producing weapons. And I was just reading today that we have essentially six firms now that produce most of the weapons, or at least the larger weapons in this country.
Name
There's
them.
No competition.
Name them.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Well, there's Lockheed Martin.
Well, yeah, Lockheed Martin.
Boeing, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, and then there are two more I can't think of what they are. But, yeah, they dominate the whole scene.
They dominate it all, and I increasingly, If the U.S. government wants to get a ship built or a plane built or whatever, there is only one bidder.
And yeah, that's, so that's it. And they think that's capitalism.
That's right, the free market.
It's like the auto companies, you know, you start off with 20 and over time, because of competition, it gets whittled down till you've got three. And then two of them go broke. So then the government has to practice socialism by saving the auto companies that have gone broke.
Right.
So, you know, in a way, it's socialism for the Pentagon, socialism for the rich, socialism for the corporations, and capitalism for all the other poor people who have virtually no health care and they can't afford to educate their kids and, you know, their houses are being taken away from them. So you have to look at the whole picture, I think, and say, well, is this really a democracy in action? Now, it could be, and I think you're leading a movement that could develop into a very democratic and exciting movement.
I hope so.
How many people have you got sort of attached to you, Barry, who can get out and door knock, who can do the basic grunt work, so to speak?
We're building that. It's not a lot at the moment. We're have a proposal in to align ourselves with a nonprofit organization. We believe that this can be done and still fit under a nonprofit category. And so by next week, hopefully, we'll be ready to go and get out to fundraise. And at that point, I think it's going to be a lot easier to be developing a long list of folks that will help to move this issue forward.
Well, you don't want to have
right
to pay
them. Right now, the two of us are doing a little bit of volunteer
yeah.
work, and it's difficult to build something which truly needs to be a national movement with a couple of part-time volunteers.
It does, but, you know, it should be starting in California. I would suggest, Barry, having sort of started several pretty big organizations, that you get as many volunteers as you can and don't
yeah.
pay anyone, just get the volunteers because they want their planet to be saved and they want a decent sort of society in which to live. Fundraising takes a lot of effort. It's a pain in the neck, to be quite frank.
Oh, it's a pain in the neck. But I'm very much looking forward. This is one issue that I've worked on a lot of politics.
Yeah.
I've never come across an issue politically where
yeah.
virtually every single person I talk to agrees with me.
I you're right.
You know, in San Francisco, when we passed the minimum wage ordinance.
Yeah.
As you said, that's a huge difference for 54,000 people.
Yeah.
And the mayor actually advised the business community, don't even bother spending any money because to oppose it because it's going to win.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it did win. 60% of the people in San Francisco voted to increase wages for minimum wage workers. There were 40% that voted no. If we could find 5% of people that would say, no, I think we ought to spend as much on our military here. I'll be astounded.
It's really simple. I'm coming to San Diego in October, Barry, and I'm speaking at a church, I think, but I would be willing to, you know, if you could get some media, certainly.
Fabulous.
Put out the message about your campaign and help in any way I can. Why don't you give our listeners the website again so that they can go and get lots and lots and lots and lots of postcards?
Thank you so much. We really appreciate all the time here. Again, it's notmyprioritiesorg.
Well, that's pretty simple, isn't it?
And hopefully I don't have to spell that out for everybody.
But I suppose you need money to print the postcards. That's what you need money
actually,
for.
Actually, that's very inexpensive.
Is it?
I can get at a union shop, I get 5,000 postcards printed up for $150.
Yeah.
So that's, if people decide they want to contribute a small amount to right now, you know, they have to write a check to me, which is that's not too cool. There have been a few people that have done that.
Mm.
And I really want to have it set up as a separate organization aligned with a nonprofit so that we can have people donate to it.
Yeah.
And we can really, you know, revise the website, make it something that's very functional so people can use it for all kinds of things, as to become a real resource for everybody in the anti-war movement. You know, all of this, I'm hoping, you know, we really haven't had to convince any of the listeners that we spend too much on military. I do hope that we have convinced folks, as part of this call, is that if you can do something very simple, just contact us, and we'll send you a couple of cards. We'll send you 5 cards.
Mm.
and that will make a big difference.
Okay, Barry. Well, look, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you and Ellen today. And I hope it inspires thousands of our listeners to do the right thing. And this is how grassroots movements begin. And as President Obama said in his acceptance speech, he has to have the people behind him. Otherwise, he really can't function, because he's up against the greatest power or powers the world has ever seen, namely the military-industrial complex and the health, what they call industry. It shouldn't be an industry. Healthcare is a right of every single person, and doctors took the Hippocratic Oath, so it shouldn't be turned into an industry. But if the people decide that they have a wonderful president who will represent them, all they have to do is really get moving. Turn off the television sets. Stop spending all your time at your computers. Get out there and organize. You can turn your country around for sure.
Believe it. I absolutely believe it in my heart.
Yeah.
You know, Obama, I don't know where he stands on this. I know that I have a quote that I used on one of my pieces of literature from the end of 2007. A quote from Nancy Pelosi, who's the head of the Democratic Party in the United States, and that her year-end message was, the new direction Congress is authorizing funds to begin increasing the size of the Army and the Marine Corps.
Oh, my God.
Absolute madness.
Oh, my God.
Just absolute madness. And so they, you know, the president, yes, needs to hear by receiving these postcards. But each member of Congress also needs to hear.
Well, so does Nancy Pelosi.
Absolutely. But this is Democratic Party policy.
Yeah.
And it's very, very hard to distinguish it from Republican Party policy.
Well, there's virtually no difference when it comes to the military. And
that's
Democrats
right.
traditionally have had to be more militaristic than Republicans to prove that they can conduct their liberal social policies domestically but be tough internationally. So that's where it comes from, way back. Anyway, look, I thank you, Barry, so
thank
much.
Thank you again.
And I hope to see you when I hit California in October. And good luck
Please,
to both of you.
Please send me information. I'll try to make it down there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Today, I've interviewed 2 guests. The first one was Ellen Augustin, who ran for U.S. Congress as Ellen Schwartz and founded 4 nonprofits. She's a contributing author to a book, A Game as Old as Empire, The Secret World of Economic Hitmen and the Web of Global Corruption. She's been featured in the Utney Reader and Hope magazine and received the Women of Achievement and Thread of Hope Awards, and was named one of the 21 visionaries of the 21st century. Barry Hermanson, our last interviewee, has been an advocate for working people for many years, and in 2003 he co-authored San Francisco's minimum wage ordinance, improving wages for 54,000 people. Because he is so concerned about where the money is going in the United States, tax dollars, he founded the Not My Priorities campaign, which is absolutely fascinating. And as you've heard today, I advise you all to go to the website notmypriorities.org, download what you need, and get to Barry and order, I say, hundreds of postcards that can be used to turn America upside down and inside out in terms of the priorities for the people.
Let's get lost, lost in each other's arms. Let's get lost, let them call our lungs. And though they'll think we're rather rude, we'll tell the world we're in that crazy mood. Let's defrost in a romantic mist. Let's get cross off everybody's list. And we will celebrate this night forever. Oh, now let's get lost. Let's get lost, let them call our lungs. And though they'll think we're rather rude, we'll tell the world we're in that crazy mood. Let's defrost in a romantic mist. Let's get crossed off everybody's lips. And we will celebrate this night.
That was Let's Get Lost by Vince Jones. You've been listening today to If You Love This Planet. I welcome you again next week. And should you wish to support us, for which we would be very grateful, you can go to our website at ifyoulovethisplanet.org, where there is a page that you can donate some funds to help to keep the program on the air. I thank you very much for listening. I think the world is developing into a more exciting place. We all do love our planet, and we, I think, can save it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.